We're going to spend our time looking at Ecclesiastes, the fifth chapter. I'm going to look, give a little background on Ecclesiastes quick. This is the author of Ecclesiastes calls himself the preacher. Some interpreters have concluded that this was Solomon, and others think that this was a person writing in the style of Solomon. Either way, the book claims that its wisdom comes from the one shepherd, or the Lord himself. The theme of Ecclesiastes is the necessity of fearing God in this fallen and confusing world. Each human wants to understand the ways of God is acting in the world, but he cannot, because he is not God. And yet the faithful do not despair, but they cling to God, even when they cannot see what God is doing. The Lord deserves his people's trust, and they can leave everything to him while they seek to understand what it means to fear God and keep his commandments. All right, I'm going to go ahead and read through chapter 5 to begin. Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. To draw near to listen is better than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know what evil they are doing. Be not rash with your mouth, nor let your heart be hasty to utter a word before God. For God is in heaven, and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. For a dream comes with much business, and a fool's voice with many words. When you vow a vow to God, do not delay paying it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you vow. It is better that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay. Let not your mouth lead you into sin, and do not say before the messenger that it was a mistake. Why should God be angry at your voice and destroy the work of your hands? For when dreams increase and words grow many, there is vanity. But God is the one you must fear. If you see in a province the oppression of the poor and the violation of justice and righteousness, do not be amazed at the matter. For the high official is watched by a higher, and there is yet higher ones over him. But this is gain for the land in every way, a king committed to cultivated fields. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This is also vanity. When goods increase, they increase those who eat them, and what advantage has their owner but to see them with his eyes? Sweet is the sleep of the laborer, whether he eats little or eats much, but the full stomach of the rich will not let him sleep. There is a grievous evil that I have seen under the sun. Riches were kept by their owner to his hurt, and those riches were lost in a bad venture. And he is the father of a son, but he has nothing in his hand. As he came from his mother's womb, he shall go again, naked as he came. And he shall take nothing for his toil that he may carry in his hand. This is also a grievous evil, that he shall go as he came. What gain is there to him who toils for the wind? Moreover, all the days he eats in darkness, in much vexation, sickness, and anger. Behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun, the few days of life that God has given him, for this is his law. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot, rejoice in his toil. This is the gift of God, for he will not much remember the days of his life, because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart. Going back to the beginning, The first couple of verses that we read are a warning to be careful of your steps when you go to the house of God. That it is better to listen than to offer the sacrifice of fools, a sentiment that is echoed throughout Scripture, that wise men hold their tongues while fools speak. Like Elihu, wading through the foolish advice of Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, before questioning Job and rebuking the others for their lack of understanding. We read the same sentiment also in Proverbs 15:8, which says, "The sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but the prayer of the upright is acceptable to him. A small offering of the righteous is worth more than a larger gift from the foolish." This is similar to what we read of the poor widow who gave 2 coins, but Jesus told his disciples that of the greatness of her sacrifice. Verses 2 and 3 speak of the importance of keeping control of your tongue, being thoughtful and using your words sparingly. It says, "Be not rash with your mouth, nor let your heart be hasty to utter a word before God, for God is in heaven and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. For a dream comes with much business, and a fool's voice with many words." Matthew 6:7 says, "And when you pray, do not heap up empty phrases as the Gentiles do, for they think they will be heard for their many words." Proverbs 10:19 says, "When words are many, transgression is not lacking, but whoever restrains his lips is prudent." I find it interesting that back in verse 2, it says, "Let not your heart be hasty to utter a word before God, for God is in heaven and you are on earth." This is a thought that's echoed 2 books later in the Old Testament in Isaiah chapter 55, verse 8. It says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are my ways your ways, declares the Lord." Verses 4 through 7 speak of the wisdom of not taking a vow, because it would be better for you to not vow than to vow and not keep your word. If you speak less, it is less likely that you will misspeak or make a mistake. I like the way that the New King James reads verse 7, and it says, "For in the multitude of dreams and many words there is also vanity, but fear God." I'm as guilty as anybody of being a daydreamer. I spend a lot of time devoted to thoughts of things that produce nothing or that come to nothing. So I tend to have this multitude of dreams that essentially waste my time. Sometimes I think of things that I have no ambition to actually pursue other than just to think about. Verses 8 through 10 warn of being too concerned with the injustices of government and placing too much importance on money or even the oppression of the poor, because being too concerned with money and how others may be misusing it can ensure that you will never be satisfied, and that seeking wealth can cause you to become dissatisfied with how much you bring home. Verse 11 and 12 say, "When goods increase, they increase those who eat them. And what advantage has their owner but to see them with his eyes? Sweet is the sleep of the laborer, whether he eats much or little, but the full stomach of the rich will not let him sleep." This was taken 2 different ways by the commentaries that I could find. The first is just as literal as it reads, meaning that the owner of the goods only gets the pleasure of seeing them, because if you produce goods, you don't keep the goods for yourself. This is something that you are selling or giving away. But the second take was this. Now that he was possessed, or he possessed much, he either ate nor drank nor slept better for it. But what he got in plenty, he had more commitments to keep. He had more to distribute to others, and he had more care and more business, which came with more trouble. Now he says he has many servants, which require more food, more drink, more clothing. Some need physicians, and all of this costs him more effort and more time. And what good does this do the owner, except that he can go into his grounds and his fields and meadows and look at the flocks of his herds and say, this is all mine. He can go into his house, he can open up his treasures, feast his eyes looking on his gold and silver and his jewels and other riches. He can take pleasure in having lots of people at his table, but they eat at his expense. Some may take pleasure in being able to do these things, but to others this only brings pain. He gets himself no more food than he can eat. So if his servant eats until they are full, his servants in many ways have an advantage over him, because all they have to worry about is their work and not managing the whole estate. So unless he does good with his wealth, he's better off not having it at all. Verses 13 through 17 say, there is a grievous evil that I have seen under the sun. Riches were kept by their owner to his hurt, and those riches were lost in a bad venture. And he is a father of a son, but he has nothing in his hand. As he came from his mother's womb, so shall he go again, naked as he came. And he shall take nothing for his toil, that he may carry away in his hand. This is also a grievous evil. Just as he came, so shall he go, and what gain is there to him who toils for the wind? Moreover, all the days he eats in darkness, in much vexation and anger and sickness. All over the scripture we read of inheritance being taken away as a punishment for wrongdoing or given in reward for righteousness. Colossians 1:10 through 14 says, so as to walk in a manner worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing to him, bearing fruit in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God, being strengthened with all power according to his glorious might, for all endurance and patience with joy, giving thanks to the Father who has qualified you to share in the inheritance of the saints in light. He has delivered us from the domain of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved Son, for in whom we have redemption and the forgiveness of sins. We are called co-heirs with Christ. A few chapters before what Miles read this morning in chapter 8 of Romans, we see such an importance placed on inheritance in the scripture. So that if you have nothing to give a child from an inheritance, naked as you came with nothing in your hand, seems to say that you have squandered your life. Similar to the parable of the talents in Matthew 25, all but one profited something from what they were given, and they were rewarded for it. But the man who took what he was given, gave no effort, and came back with nothing more, was cast out into darkness. Like the man in Ecclesiastes, he toiled for the wind, produced nothing to show by the time his master came home. The last grouping of verses in chapter 5 are a great encouragement and comfort. Behold, I have seen what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in the toil with which one toils under the sun and the few days of his life that his Lord has given him, for this is his lot. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power, enjoy them and accept his lot and rejoice in his toil. This is the gift of God, for he will not much remember the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart. We see all over the New Testament people being praised as workers in the Lord. In the letters to the Romans and the Philippians, and I believe this chapter reinforces the beauty in living a simple life, working hard, controlling your words, in a time where people are praised for always having something to say, working as little as possible and living extravagantly. I see that Ecclesiastes is a refreshing contrast. As I get older, I view the wisdom of saying less. I usually find after a few years have passed, I don't agree with what I used to say anyway, or that I feel like I maybe said it in a strange way. And I encourage you this morning to accept your lot, find enjoyment in your toil for the Lord, and hope that you don't remember much the days of your life because God has kept you occupied with the joy in your heart. That's all I have this morning.